I knew I wanted to do a story on my plumber, Frank Marchand, when he first showed up to my house for a job wearing a hospital bracelet. Turns out he was just back from a chemotherapy appointment, and when I apologized for asking him to work under those circumstances, he assured me there was nowhere he'd rather be. So the next time I called him to figure out why my toilet tank was leaking, I asked if I could bring out my tape recorder.
So I don't even know how old this thing is.
It's not that old because it's 1.6 gallons.
Okay.
Frank is sitting on the floor of my bathroom, tightening the bolts at the base of my water tank. His hair goes down to his shoulders, loose clothing on his tall, thin frame.
Let's see what happens here. See, paper towels in that toolbox right there.
His hospital bracelet is still hanging on his wrist from his cancer treatment that morning.
This is my 94th chemo treatment.
That's over the course of 7 years, since a colonoscopy at age 60 found stage 4 colon cancer. By now, he's had 2 major surgeries and doesn't expect to be cured, but hopes the bi-monthly treatments at Cooley Dickinson Hospital will extend his life.
I look at the nurse and say, why don't you go out for breakfast? I'll take care of the rest of this. Because I know where all the tubes connect, and now let's start the equipment and stuff.
Over the years, he's gotten to know a lot of people at the hospital, including some from his life growing up in Franklin County.
I call them hellmates in the chemotherapy room. One of them was my chemistry teacher from 7th grade. And I looked at him and said, what the hell are you doing? Are you visiting somebody? Because now I got leukemia.
That was last year, and his former teacher didn't live long after.
And I've known him and his wife for years, doing their plumbing work and getting in that nasty crawl space under their house. I was in the line to express my condolences at the wake, and his wife Janet was first in line. She said, oh my God, he was like enough that even his plumber showed up. Look at a little drippage there. We're still tightening it.
It's weird that it's so loose.
Frank Marchand has been a plumber for 47 years, most of it working for himself. Throughout that time, he's become enamored of water, from what flows through household pipes to all bodies of water, especially the beach. But it all started when he was 12, living in Sunderland, across the street from a narrow brook.
And I would go over there after school each day, ripping sod out of the side banking and damming that brook up. And when I was successful enough to actually stop the water, it would find its way around my dam and wash it out. And I was frustrated that I could never control that. So I think planted in my brain was the concept that whenever water misbehaves, you're responsible for making it behave.
So, all right, so about my toilet, what do you think?
I'm gonna see if I can find another handle for that, because that's what's hanging up.
Sometimes on his plumbing rounds, Frank meets clients facing the same cancer ordeal that he is. Like at one couple's home.
A man was on his sofa, down to 85 pounds. They called because he didn't have any hot water. But he hadn't eaten in about a week, and he was destined for hospice.
When Frank was done fixing their water heater, he came back upstairs to sit with the dying man and offer some advice.
Have you ever thought about what you're going to think about on your deathbed? I mean, you don't want to lay there bouncing around wondering, why me, and concentrate on that. He goes, no, I haven't thought about it.
Well, Frank had, and he said he wasn't planning to dwell on his mistakes or regrets.
But what I'm going to spend my time thinking about while I'm on my deathbed is the best corned beef hash I ever had in my life. The Green Heron in Kennebunkport, Maine. And they almost incinerated the potatoes. They were burned on the outside and really soft inside. Caramelized onions. And just before serving it, they mixed in shredded boiled cabbage. And, oh my God, I loved it so much. I sat there and ordered another plate of it.
Those transcendent moments, Frank told the man, that's what he wants to think about at the end.
His wife called me after he died to say that he took to heart what you were saying, and he was peaceful.
As Frank tells me this story, his hands submerged in my water tank, I notice him coughing a lot.
These masks are so full of dust.
Do you want some water? Can I give you some water?
I think so.
Yeah.
Merci beaucoup.
I had to wonder, wouldn't it be easier for him to take a medical leave? At 67, he could certainly justify retirement, cancer or not.
I told myself from the very beginning that my immune system is going to have to work really hard to fight this disease that I can't control. So do I want to sit on a sofa, watch TV, eat chips, and worry about what's growing inside of me? Because now it's going to deal with bile and anxiety and angst about what's going on that you can't control.
Plumbing, on the other hand, is one of the few things he can control.
I mean, when I'm doing work, if that valve right there doesn't work, I need to know exactly where to go to the next one that will stop the water if this breaks off in my hand.
But I still want to know, how does he cope with what he knows is coming, with mortality itself? For a time, he had help from a voice in his head, his childhood imaginary friend, the same friend who kept him company when he was 3 years old, playing with toy dump trucks. The memory is still vivid.
And my mom comes out of the house and she looks at me and says, "Who are you talking to?" "My friend." "But there's nobody there." "Well, yes, there is. My friend is here."
In the intervening decades, Frank stopped hearing from the friend through marriage, children, divorce, second marriage, until shortly after his surgeon told him in a recovery room the cancer was terminal.
And I'm lying on the bed completely alone, scared out of my wits. And who shows up but the imaginary friend? Is, "Hey, what's going on? You're shaking. Why are you shaking?" I don't know. I mean, the news that I just got, I have no idea how much time I have left. I know I'm never going to get to finish the projects that I started, all the things I'd hoped for in my life. I just got a limited amount of time. And he says, "You know, I you don't know this, but I've been with you all your life, watching every move you make. And I can understand how you're anxious about having to do this, but I'm not going to let you do this alone. I'm going to go with you."
But eventually, the friend says, once he knows Frank is okay, he will leave.
"And you have to find me. And when you do find me, you'll see that I found the nicest beach and saved a lounge chair for you."
Of course, Frank tells me he knows there's no actual friend. It's his own voice, his own conscience. And yet...
that experience took the weight of 20 tons off my shoulders to come to the realization that I'm not immortal and to prioritize the time that I have left, because you don't know how much time that is.
By the time Frank is done talking, and I'm just about in tears myself, I almost forget that he came over to fix my toilet.
I come in and scare the hell out of the plumbing. See, that's all fixed now.
Is it? You fixed it? Okay. So I'm planning to call you when I need to replace it. So you're going to answer the phone then, right?
That would be the plan. If it rings to heaven, then you got the wrong number.
A few weeks later, my radiator started to leak, and Frank came back. Hospital bracelet on his wrist, stories to tell, and no plans to stop. For New England Public Media, I'm Karen Brown.